You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com.
He did it again. He went friendly librarian in the middle of that.
This is your neighborhood friendly librarian.
You're going to be Barry White. Be Barry White through the whole thing.
It's a beautiful day for a podcast. A beautiful
All right.
day for
then
a podcast.
Then I will try. I'm going to try it again, and I'm going to go Barry White, and this is how are we going to get how we're going to begin the show. You ready?
Well, if we can't get Kathleen Turner to do it, then I guess you need to do it.
Well, we need to tweet at Siri too. Just have the Siri lady do it, right?
She follows me.
Oh,
she follows me too. I'm
me
sure
too.
She follows.
She follows
John
100,000 people. But yeah,
there you go.
I'm gonna see if Kathleen Turner's on Twitter.
All right. In the meantime, I'm gonna begin the show off by going Barry White. You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello.
Devin's still shaking his head at me. He did not like the way that I started that started the show that time. Devin, go ahead. You didn't
I'm
like
sure
it.
Someone is swooning.
Are we really like?
Why isn't Kathleen Turner on Twitter when I need her?
Yes, we're really starting the show, folks. If you're listening, we're in the middle of trying to find the perfect way to start the show, and so I went Barry White, mixed with, according to Devin, a little librarian, and now Germs is on the other side looking for Kathleen Turner on Twitter. There is how we spend our time as we get ready to kick off the podcast.
John, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Just, you know, looking for good voices to possibly do the intro. Not that we're firing anyone.
No, not
at all.
We haven't fired that intern yet, so I'm sure we're not going to fire the voice talent either, or lack thereof.
We might.
Good idea. I should have him see if he can find Kathleen Turner.
Yes, put that good intern to work because, you know, he doesn't do enough already as it is. Oh, all right. Yes, we are starting this. And hey, there's nothing wrong with having a few jokes and fun to start the show with. So
let's not scare the listeners off.
I'm not scaring anybody off.
Next week, we'll report our numbers and see if that's true or not.
Oh, dear. No, see, I see what you did there. You're going numbers on me now. That's it. I'm not sharing numbers with
numbers.
Either of you.
Never. I am all about abstract and feelings.
Oh, gosh.
Well, let's get abstract and let's get some feelings on the last week of basketball for the Jazz.
Yes, let's do this. We'll let's talk about previous games. We'll go back to Brooklyn and we'll go from Brooklyn and jump into Detroit. Thoughts on Brooklyn? Well, Brooklyn's a bad team. They're just a horrible team. Any surprises in that game?
Surprises? No. I expected them to win, but I'm finding that I'm expecting them to win fewer and fewer games. Brooklyn was cool because he had seven guys score in double figures, and it was just, you know, a dominant effort from beginning to end. Let's see. Even Plyce got time. That's how good that game was. Then Detroit happened, and I didn't watch the Detroit game, but I, you know, read the box score and the play-by-play and read the summaries, and it just really sounds like the Jazz had a terrible first half and couldn't ever recover enough to pull off that win. And who would have predicted that the Pistons would sweep the series this year?
Yeah. I unfortunately missed, or maybe it's fortunate that I missed the first half of the Pistons game, but apparently I didn't miss much. I mean, the Jazz put 13 points on the board in the first quarter at home against the Pistons. That's not good. You can't put 13 points on the board and think that you're going to have I don't know. I mean, at home, I guess you can and make up for it, but the Jazz really could never recover. And they did in the fourth quarter. They got close, but not close enough. And, oh, by the way, guess what? Another point guard goes off for 30 against the Jazz in the process. So, you know, I mean, that guard play is kicking our butts this year. And rightfully so, we're missing Dante Exum.
Yeah, and if they're saying Neto had concussion-like symptoms, he might be missing a game.
This is true.
And I also see that Trey Burke only played 22 minutes, so they decided that he was so ineffective that they just decided to play without a point guard for 20 minutes.
Joe Ingles was your point guard.
I like it.
Do you?
No, not really. Not particularly,
well,
but
plus
Troy
11.
Just,
I mean,
yeah, but yeah. Well, and then the Jazz go off. Let's throw this in there. Jazz go out and sign a 10-day contract for a young man by the name of Eric. What's his last name?
Eric Green.
Eric Green.
Welcome home.
I love that signing. Yeah. This means that instead of trading Eric Green and cash for Rudy Gobert, we just traded cash for Rudy Gobert.
Well,
and we got Eric Green back
for 10 days because Eric Green, it's only a 10-day contract. I'm not sure the Jazz sign him for the rest of the season.
Well, if we waived him, it's because we waived him.
All right.
You know,
whatever
his fate's in our hands.
Whatever we want to tell ourselves to make it feel good and feel right.
He is our second round pick to do with as we choose, just like we let Hanlon go this year.
My understanding, he was picked one spot ahead of Raul Neto.
See?
There you go. So, and so both of you like the pick. I don't know enough about Eric Green to know what to expect out of him. But again, at this point in time, you're just looking to fill spots. I mean, it's funny. Well, I listened to the radio today. This is sad. You get Derek Favors back. And before Derek Favors even enters the game, you lose Neto for the rest of the game. What does that say about the Jazz season right now? Can we catch a break at all?
Well, you've kind of steered us into gypsy territory here. I don't think we're cursed. Some teams just have really bad luck with injuries. I'm thinking of Portland and Indiana in years past. I think, yeah, it just sucks. But we do have Favors back, and Favors is a lot more crucial to the success of the team than Neto.
And Favors looked good last night too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a plus 11, so he played 19 and a half minutes. He had 14 points, 5 boards. You know, sounds great. Looks like Booker was a minus 15 in 14 minutes, so it sounds like he did not have a great game. But, you know, Eric Green, it looks like we signed him because he's shooting lights out from 3 in the D-League. And the Jazz really need some consistent shooters. Hood has been great lately, but he's still not to where I would say he's consistent.
No.
And then Hayward is kind of up and down too. He was 1 for 7 from 3 last night. So
let's go back to Hood for a minute. How about Hood knocking down a 30-footer last night to tie the game up? I mean, that shot was, I mean, that was right down the barrel, just knocked it down. That was pretty sweet.
He didn't tie it up.
Or didn't tie it up. You got it, brought him within one, though, didn't he?
Brought it within one.
Brought him within one. But that shot had some beauty to it. It was nice to see. And like I said, he was good 30 feet out. He was a good 4 or 5 feet beyond the arc when he took that shot. Just dropped it. So, I mean, I liked it.
Well, he is our second leading scorer now. I mean, that's just how it's going. He has gotten double figures in the last 10 games, of the last 10 games. He had that 32-point game on the second. Second against Memphis. So, you know, I'm pleased as punch with his development. He's showing that he's going to be a solid piece. But yeah, we're still in a period of the season where it's injuries giving other guys chances to step up. And Rodney's doing really well with his chance. But, you know, the thing that is the Jazz just don't have a really good point guard right now.
No.
And it's really affects the team. The point guard is really important. And you can't say that Neto or Burke has been consistent. I mean, Burke is having his best season of his career so far.
And I would say he's been consistent. He's been fairly consistent as Trey Burke can be at this point in time. Don't give me the weird look, Devin, because I'm not
interesting way to put it.
I'm not reaching here. I'm just saying, I mean, in the past with Trey Burke, you didn't know what you were going to get. And this year, I think we're almost to the point night in and night out where we can expect at least, I mean, he's going to give us, are there nights we're going to see any less than probably 14, 15 points? Not very often. He's going to get you that off the bench. He's still making big shots when it matters. You know, I mean, you just go back to this road trip where he hit that three to tie up Charlotte in that game. You know, he's going to give you those big shots when you need them. So it's, you know, I wouldn't call him entirely inconsistent. I think he's been better this year.
He's been better. But John, and I'm sorry, I know you're all about the feelings and, you know, the vibe.
Oh, boy.
But could you hit us with the stats from last night and what we saw out of Trey Burke?
I think we already know what we saw.
Yeah, he was 0-for-8. This is his third scoreless game of the year. Now, granted, he'll only have scoreless games when he's yanked or something else happens. He only played 8 minutes against the Clippers. Do you remember why that was? I don't remember why that was.
No, I don't.
Anyway, he had no points in the opening game against Detroit. He played terribly that game, and Detroit just took the Jazz by surprise, I think. And then there was a Clipper game. He had 0 points. I don't know what happened there. He only played 8 minutes. And then last night he was 0-for-8, and he only played 22 minutes in a game where we really needed a point guard.
So what you're saying for Trey Burke is don't play Detroit and you're fine. He had one bad game against the Clippers, but the other two 0 point games were against Detroit. Take Detroit out of the picture and he's just fine.
You know what? Detroit has his number. You might be onto something there.
Why, thank you.
Reggie Jackson, Defensive Player of the Year.
Oh, my gosh. You're on to something there. Wow.
He'll have these nights. He was 0-for-3 against Memphis from 3. He was 0-for-6 with Sacramento. These happen. But, yeah, he has been another guy that the Jazz have counted on for scoring in double digits.
And I think the other knock is
he scored double digits his past 12 games until last night.
Well, so. And the other knock that's been against him is his defense, which I thought has been an improvement this year as well. He's gone from bottom of the league to I think he's averaging out a little more on the defensive end. Granted, everybody can pick on him for last night, but I mean, Jackson put 29 on the board. I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know how much Neto would have been any better defensively on him than Trey was either. I just don't know how you expected defensively last night out of Trey any more than what you got.
It's a common theme. The Jazz backcourt gets absolutely roasted.
I agree.
By point guards. Look at what Kemba Walker did last time we saw him. He'll be in town tonight.
Tomorrow, tonight, for those who are listening today, yes.
I don't know. If you're going to be playing Trey Burke, he needs to get you points because he's not out there for his defense. And that's one of the reasons I like the signing with the Jazz bringing Green in, is because the guy is 6'3", 6'4". He's a bigger point guard. And I don't know how he is in terms of speed. I know they're bringing him in for his shooting. But my hope is that he has a little bit more of a defensive presence.
Yeah, I'm hoping that his size can at least slow some guys down and, you know, put a body on someone. And because Burke's 6'1", maybe, and then Neto, I don't think, is any bigger. He might be 6'2".
I think you're being kind in both cases, specifically Burke, because
I'm trying to remember what they're listed at. You know, this is both in shoes.
Right. I think Burke is closer to 6' in shoes, but yeah.
Well, he's 6'1" on Basketball Reference, so okay. He's 6'1".
And there you go. Okay, well, so, all right, let's look ahead really quickly, and then we have a piece that we wanted to talk about too, but looking ahead, we got Charlotte tomorrow night. We've got, who is it Friday? I don't have the schedule in front of me.
Minnesota, and then Friday. We also have Chicago. So they've got 5 more home games in a row. So all those are home games. Chicago, Minnesota, Charlotte. Charlotte will be a test.
Yes, they will. Because
Charlotte somehow beat the Jazz last time. If we don't have Neto, then I assume that means that Burke starts and Green will be the bench point guard. We'll see how that goes. I mean, Charlotte is a thin roster, and the Jazz really should beat Charlotte.
Well, and
because they have Favors back.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I bet you Favors doesn't play 19 minutes. I bet Favors is probably going to be closer to 25, 26 minutes, which will be good. And on that, on the front line, I think that's going to be nice. You're not going to have, I mean, Frank Kaminsky is going to stretch the floor, but I don't know that Frank Kaminsky is going to beat you, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well, I mean, really, they should win all of these games because all of these teams have their issues. Charlotte's actually been doing okay. And really, of the three, Charlotte might be their biggest challenge because Chicago has been off lately. Chicago has lost 7 of the last 10, and there's just stuff going on there.
Don't you understand that's the recipe for beating the Jazz, though? Drop 7 of 10 and then show up in Salt Lake, and everything's all better.
That's true.
The only team that doesn't fit that mold is Brooklyn. We just need a good case of Brooklyn coming into town, but, you know, whatever.
Brooklyn and Lakers and Sixers and
okay, so that's I think Devin, when he did his morning shoot around, had the Jazz going 3-1 over this week's stretch, with last night being the only game they lost. And actually, good call on that game last night. Devin was about a point or two off on either side, pretty close. So it you know, you had them winning their next three games.
Next two. We had you only you projected have them, the three games this week.
Oh, you didn't project them against Chicago because that was next week. Okay. So they pick up their next two. So, yeah, they should win the next three in a row, but should and do are two totally different things when we're talking about the Jazz right now. Which, by the way, let's talk about further in-depth on the Jazz. Today, Zach Lowe dropped a piece out on ESPN. John, you read it?
Yes, I did.
Devin, did you get a chance to read it? I'll take that as a possibly, maybe, perhaps.
My dog ate it.
Well, then here's this. Initial thoughts on it, John.
It was a timely piece because it's one where the Jazz have not had the jump that they were expecting. And it's all because of injuries, sure. But in an NBA with shorter contracts, you can't afford to just, you know, throw away a year. And so the Jazz are going to be in a crossroads soon. And, you know, Zach brought up some good points that with all these guys, with all these young guys with contract extensions coming up, it doesn't really make sense to keep them all together when they still haven't won anything. And granted, it's injuries this year, but they probably have to decide soon. You know, they probably have to make some decisions. I mean, they're together this year. Booker's the only one they'll lose next year. But after that, you know, after next season, Hayward's going to be a free agent. And that's also when you have to extend Rudy. And if you want to extend Ingles, fine. And then the year after that, Favors is a free agent. You got to extend Dante Exum.
I will say this too.
And then there's, what do you do with Burke?
Well, and I'll say this too. The one thing he did point out to what you mentioned at first is he said that the Jazz are coming up on that crossroads with players. And the largely unfortunate part about this whole thing is that injuries prevented them from doing what they wanted to do this year. This year was a development year, but this year was a year where you hoped you could get a gauge on the player and the personnel you have, making it much easier to make that decision here in the next two or three years about what you're going to do. Now you've lost 1 year of development because of injuries, and now that decision becomes even much more difficult to make on what moves you do, on who you sign and what you don't. It becomes more of a crapshoot now than it did before. You could sure yourself up with all the players playing, but now you're really going into this blindly.
Yeah. That's the problem with injuries in this era of the NBA is you just don't have the luxury of time.
No.
Now he floated different ideas, and he made it sound like the Jazz are probably going to have to trade Hayward or Favors in the next year or two, which would be sad because those are our top two guys. And we're all hoping that Hayward and Favors and Gobert and Exum would grow together. And Hood now really, but you know, in 2 or 3 years, they're all going to be good enough that we would expect a lot of money. And so they're probably not going to be able to keep them. And that's around the point that we were hoping that we might have a championship team.
Well, and interestingly enough, I think he leaned heavily on Favors more than Hayward. And he spoke very much of that front court of Favors and Gobert being outside of the mold of today's NBA. They're not stretch guys. They aren't shooters outside. And unless you can get the two of them to increase their range, particularly Gobert, you're really not playing to the NBA small ball and the way that they do things now. And it was very interesting to hear him talk a little bit about that. But it's also interesting, he threw a quote out there from Gobert saying, look, I mean, when we play Golden State, you know, I can guard Draymond Green. I can go out and guard the guy outside. I don't have a problem doing that. And it was interesting to see Zach talk about the fact that, yeah, I mean, Gobert is lanky and kind of moves really smoothly, could probably pull that off. I mean, he even went as far as to say in the P3 sports camp that these two are physical specimens unlike any other in the NBA. But the problem is they're not fitting the mold of today's NBA. And that's another reason why the Jazz may have to look to move Favors or something like that, because the Jazz have a front court that doesn't fit the prototypical NBA front court.
Mm-hmm. He has some options out there. I'm wondering if you wanted to touch on any of them. One thing he said that would make sense is trading Favors for Kevin Love.
I would probably be okay.
Do you think either would do that?
I don't know that they would. I would probably be okay with that. I put it to Jazz fans listening if they would. I tend to think a few Jazz fans might have issue with that. A lot of it in part to do with Kevin Love's lack of ability or interest on defense, really. But from a stretch four standpoint of what Kevin Love can do, yeah, I'd love that actually. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Love would bring more wins now, and I think it would be interesting to see Love in a different environment. He hasn't seemed that happy in Cleveland. So maybe it would do him good to go back to a smaller market. But you know, Kevin Love hasn't really won anywhere.
No,
yet.
He hasn't.
I mean, as far as when he's one of the top two guys with, sorry.
Well, he's again, you're taking a chance on a guy just like you did on an Al Jefferson. Oh, by the way, they're both former Minnesota guys. You bring Al Jefferson in, who never won, you know, never was on a winning team, was the number one guy, and that team didn't really go anywhere. And then he comes here, and we had 1 year where they went to the playoffs, but other than that, they didn't go anywhere. And then he goes to Charlotte. They had a winning year, go to the playoffs, but now they're struggling without him. It's almost the same kind of scenario, isn't it?
Maybe, but you know, Love is a completely different player.
Yeah,
Love
he is.
Can shoot. He can shoot from the outside. He's a really good rebounder, and you know, maybe with Gobert there, his defensive averageness, shall we call it, shouldn't be that big a deal. The thing that we've really noticed though is Gobert without Favors, it does seem like he has to do an awful lot. I mean, when Favors and Gobert are together, the defense is awesome. And when one of them has to miss, the defense suffers. And it suffers more when Gobert is gone. But it's still not as good with Favors out. And that tandem of those two is just really good at just stopping everything. But if you trade for Love, then you have that guy that you can just give the ball to at the end of the game and trust he can just put the team on his back and score. And we don't really have that guy. Hayward is close to being that guy, but not really yet.
So what was one of the other scenarios that Zach threw out there? Remind me, because I'm trying to remember one of the ones.
Okay.
There was one for Teague from
Atlanta. That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah, Teague.
It was the trade.
Jeff Teague.
In fact, who was it? You send Alec Burks and
Trey Burke, I believe.
Trey Burke, the Burke and Burks to Atlanta.
Burke and Burks.
Yep, in favor of Jeff Teague. Would you do it?
Burke and Burks for Teague? Probably. Yeah, if you do that, you have a top, at least a top 15 point guard. I don't know if he's top 10, but he's at least a top 15 point guard. And then if Exum comes back as your bench guy, then Exum can kind of ease back into the NBA life. And you would hope that he would really try to push Teague and try to become a better player. Teague would be one where Jazz are in the playoffs if they get Teague, and then you just go from there. And Teague, if I remember right, he's free agent at the end of this year.
I believe he had another year
or something. So the thing that you would do with Teague is you would hope that in doing that trade, you're really hoping that you can then extend him. But I think that would be a
fair enough.
That would be worthwhile.
Okay, so
I think that'd be a good trade.
I'm going to throw a couple of names at you really quickly, and then we'll get off this topic and move on. But well, and actually, okay. One more thought on Zach. But today, going back and forth with Brett on Twitter, Brett started rolling through the ESPN trade machine. One particular trade had, and I didn't like everything that the Jazz got back, nor did I think that Sacramento would make the move. But part of the trade, it was a three-team deal, would send Cousins to Cleveland, which I'm just saying they wouldn't do. It would send Love to Sacramento, but it would send Frank Kaminsky, who was part of the deal as well. Charlotte was involved, I think. Frank Kaminsky to the Jazz.
So it was a four-team deal?
I think it was a three- or four-team deal. I'd have to go back and look at it.
Just name four teams, so.
Yeah, I think it was a four-team deal. And I could be getting two different deals mixed up because he sent me both, but What are your thoughts? I mean, Frank Kaminsky's another guy that I was very high on at draft time, and I still am. And watching him play against the Jazz last week, Frank has a lot to offer in the NBA because he does fit the prototypical stretch four. He can stretch the floor, shoot the three. He's not a
Let me just stop you. Charlotte is not trading Frank.
No, I agree. I don't think they would either. He is. A fairly decent defender, and he's got some really good moves offensively. So I like his game if the Jazz could ever get him. But I agree with you. I'm right there with you. I don't think Charlotte moves him for any reason. I think they like him. But that
Frank's a good player. We can talk about other rookies in the NBA that aren't coming here. Justice Winslow's not having a great shooting night. Miami is still not trading him. Carl Anthony Towns is putting up great numbers in Minnesota. I don't think they're ready to give up on him yet.
Russell is not seeing very many games in LA, and you know they're not giving him up.
Could we get Kristaps Porzingis?
Oh dear.
Oh, I'm sure we could. If we offer him like Joe Ingles and the Oklahoma City pick, I think New York would go great.
All right. We'll stop right there. I'm just saying there's trade machines being thrown out, and there's going to be all sorts of trade thoughts going together here for the next little while. The one thing that Zach did say in the end of part of his article is I think he felt in the end the Jazz probably wouldn't make a move, which is probably going to be the case. I mean, that's not what they've done. He did mention that that the Jazz are trying not necessarily to go with a big name guy who's going to finish games, but I think they're going for a model fairly similar to what we saw from Detroit in 2004. And what's interesting is that he even quoted one of the assistant coaches in Atlanta who played on that team with in saying that Quinn used to like pick his brain about that team. And he even quoted Hayward in saying that, yeah, they've thought about that team. And I think that's really, if they can get all of their cards right, I think that's what the Jazz want to do, is get a team of really good or great players who can mesh well chemistry-wise on the floor and make a run, see where it takes you. The problem is again, injuries have kind of, you know, stopped that, hedged it right now.
Mm.
So, I don't know.
Should we move on to other NBA news?
Yes, we should. Let's do so. Let's jump into what we could start with the NBA news of the big news today.
Well, we've got the Clippers on the other line. They want to trade Blake Griffin for Derek Favors. Do you do that one?
Only if I can make sure that he's not going to punch somebody on the Jazz sideline, you know, one of the trainers.
Oh, I'd give him one free punch.
You would?
No, it's really interesting. The Clippers came out very harshly, publicly rebuking Blake Griffin for punching this equipment guy. And, you know, whoever this guy is, you got to figure he's a guy that's been with the Clippers for years, too. And so not only does he strike another employee, but he injures his hand to make him out for like another 4 to 6 weeks. And the Clippers are trying really hard to, you know, they feel like they are in the championship window, and they're what, fourth seed right now. They have a pretty decent hold on the fourth seed, but they really need all cylinders firing when they get to the playoffs. And now with Blake gone for 6 weeks, you know, maybe 6 weeks, he probably misses the All-Star game. Maybe he's back by March 1st, they would hope. Who knows what can happen between now and then.
Barring a suspension, too, which I could see either the league or the Clippers handing down to him, too.
Yeah. Yeah. The equipment guy could sue. There could be charges filed with the police. That's what would happen at most other jobs. If one employee punches another employee.
Yeah.
Charges would be filed.
I don't know if you
it's
saw what
funny
I,
how the NBA is.
Well, and I don't know if you saw what I retweeted, and I don't know how much Entourage you've watched, but it was interesting to see an LA Times reporter tweet out that the scenario or situation with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and this equipment guy is similar to the Entourage relationship.
Okay. I think I'd have to read that to know who's who.
Yeah, right.
Are they talking about drama and Turtle and this other guy is Ari? I don't know.
Well, I don't think he really named names from Entourage. He just said that the relationship, the ongoing relationship between the three of them is somewhat like a scene out of Entourage. That's what he put it as.
Oh, I think I get what he's saying, where these are the famous guys and this is the unfamous guy who like goes with them everywhere anyway. Probably something like that.
Probably.
Okay, I get it. You know, I didn't think the Clippers were going to win the championship anyway. I think at best they're going to be a second round team because you have the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Thunder up there. Oh, this is one point I wanted to make earlier. We talked about how the West is down this year for the first time in 15 years. The West is down, but it really isn't down. It only looks down because the 8 seed has a losing record in the West. But when you look at the win percentages overall, the West is still dominant because the Warriors and the Spurs and the Thunder are that good. In fact, yes, all three of those teams have a better winning percentage than Cleveland, the top team in the East. Speaking of Cleveland, segueing to the other big story of the week, we haven't covered this yet.
David Blatt.
David Blatt got fired. Which,
yep.
You know, in principle, sounds really bad that you can fire a coach who got you to the NBA Finals last year and you're number one in your conference. You're 30-11. You're on pace for a 60-win season and you still get fired. But when I listen to some of the reporters around Cleveland talking about it, it's not crazy. It's not crazy that they got rid of Blatt.
I'm going to say this, though. Have we not seen this coming? I believe last season there was a bit of a confrontation that went on that I think we all saw the writing on the wall before it even got to this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have put it past them to fire Blatt over the summer for not winning the championship.
Yeah.
Even though they weren't fully healthy, and they haven't been fully healthy this year.
And not fully healthy, and they go six games and just shy of taking it to a seventh game against the very good Warriors. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And it was really one of those things where management just kind of looked at the team, looked at LeBron, and it wasn't just LeBron. It sounded like none of the veterans on that team respected Blatt. And if they're that good with a coach that most of them don't respect and don't buy into, then how good could they be with a coach that they do respect and they can buy into? And here's some points about Tyronn Lue. A lot of people have been talking about how he's one of the best assistant coaches in the NBA. Tyronn Lue brings the credibility of having been a former player.
And a championship-winning player.
A championship-winning player. I heard one, I think it was Amin El-Hassan, who was talking about how Tyronn Lue would have really good games against Cleveland when LeBron was a young player there. And that, you know, that leaves impressions on your mind where you have certain players. There's the players who are good at everything, but then there are those players that always have really good games against your team. That leaves an impression. And so Tyronn Lue brings all of that credibility with him. And LeBron, most of his coaches haven't played in the NBA, you know? Spoelstra never played in the NBA, and LeBron didn't respect him at first. And it took Pat Riley to stand behind Spoelstra and going, no, he's not going anywhere, LeBron.
To his coach in Cleveland.
Mike Brown.
Yep, didn't play in the NBA.
Did Byron Scott ever coach LeBron?
No, I don't think so. In fact,
I think he was brought in for the terrible years.
Yep, they brought him in before LeBron was moved on to Miami, but that was that summer of the decision.
I think they hired him as a way to try to keep LeBron,
and LeBron said, "See ya." Yeah,
and they should have just kept Mike Brown anyway.
I'm just gonna say, I've been laughing over here because you talk about lasting impressions that players leave on you, and that Tyronn Lue probably left a good impression. There's only one play in my mind that still sits very strongly in my mind of Tyronn Lue, and that's why I can always laugh. It's Allen Iverson stepping over him after dropping a step back jumper on him and tripping over him. In the NBA Finals. So there you have it. That's my impression of Tyronn Lue, whipping boy on the floor looking up at Allen Iverson. Anyway. And I still laugh every time I hear about it or think about it. So that's just, do you remember which one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
It was the only game that actually I think Philly won in that entire series. And it was in L.A., by the way. And then L.A. went on to win three straight and win that series four games to one, I think it was. But it was that particular play that still sits very strongly on my mind.
All right.
Nobody's amused by my thought process there.
No, I remember it, and it's just an unfortunate way to get posterized.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
If Delonte West ever becomes a coach, I'll still just remember him as the dork who tried to wet Willie Gordon Hayward. But
yeah, me too. Wait, you want to coach me? Are you going to wet Willie me in the process? All right, anyway. All right, so that's our NBA news. One last mention of note before we move on. The Jazz 2-Minute Report came out today. And by the way, anybody who did not catch it that's now listening to this, the final play of the game where Gordon Hayward's jersey was held by Morris was considered a no call and a correct no call by the NBA officials. So apparently they didn't think, even after reviewing it, that it was worthy of a foul call.
I didn't see the game, so.
Well, it was.
I don't have an opinion.
It was the final play of the game, and then they even show the replay on the NBA report. But Gordon Hayward, the play was called for Gordon, and the ball was inbounded to Hood, and Gordon was supposed to go through a couple of screens. Morris grabbed a good handful of Gordon's jersey, and Gordon finally escaped, only to catch a ball that was fumbled on the ground and then turn around and take a last second three that he missed before the clock was, by the time the clock was gone anyway. But it was one of those plays that I think everybody was a little bit sour on because they felt like Morris grabbed a handful of jersey and it was blatant right in front of you and the ref didn't call it. So I don't know.
And they review that and they say correct, no call. That seems a little crazy.
Yep. That's exactly what it was.
It was one of those plays that'll get you 10 yards and another down in football. So I don't know how it's okay in the NBA. But the inbound, the late inbound pass, final play situations that the Jazz seem to be in a lot this season. It feels like we've had at least a handful, if not more.
Yes.
Of these situations. The Jazz are so tunnel visioned when it comes to these plays, because it's always drawn up for like Hayward. And that's all they look at. The inbound pass. How many times have we seen them where it's just focusing on the guy who's supposed to get the ball? And if they can't get it to that one guy, they call another timeout or they try to force the pass and it gets tipped and it doesn't work out. It's my one issue with Coach Snyder. And I know it's going to get better. I know he'll improve in it, but it really just reminds me how lucky we were, because those plays, those were Sloan's bread and butter, He always had the last minute play drawn up, and sure, maybe the shot didn't always go down, but you always felt confident with the Jazz going into that. And every time I see this team in that situation, I just dread it, because really, Alan, you watched the game. John, you didn't see it, but it seemed like they just waited for Gordon to somewhat get open, rather than Hood maybe taking the ball and trying to get his own shot.
Yeah, they did wait for the play to develop a little bit. They did. And they took a lot of time in doing so.
They waited until there was maybe 2 seconds to throw the ball to Hayward. And in that time, it's a catch and shoot. I'm not happy with it. And I had to tell you guys, because no one else wants to listen to me about this.
We're here for you, Devin.
Thanks. Yes.
But since I made a football reference,
we're going to jump right into our next topic, and that's football.
You guys want to talk football?
We do, and we can talk about predictions for Super Bowl, although I might just keep my mouth shut because I could make a prediction, but I'm in somebody else's house, and I would never hear the end of it, and I might get kicked out, too. So
are the Panthers going to win by a lot or a hell of a lot?
In other words, John, you can make all those predictions and comments you want because you're not in the same room as a Denver Broncos fan like I am.
John, this is a family show.
No, I'm excited about this game. I'll say this. It's kind of nice to see Peyton get one last opportunity. He's going to retire, and he's been one of the enjoyable parts of the last decade and a half of football. I mean, he's one of those guys that's likable. So it's kind of nice to see him get another opportunity. It's also nice to see Cam Newton have an opportunity to go out there and prove that he's more than just a one-time, one-deal, one-and-done kind of guy that just can't seem to make it to the big game. So I'm kind of happy for both of them.
Yeah, although Peyton Manning... Okay, if you watch that game with non-Bronco fan ears, I tweeted out that the CBS announcers were treating Peyton Manning like he was some make-a-wish kid that they just had to be really nice to. And it's like, oh, look how cute. He threw a completion. And it was just like, what are you guys doing? I mean, Denver's defense is amazing, and they have all this talent around him. But Peyton himself, he's just a shell of what he used to be.
Oh, yeah, he is.
And so as I look at this Super Bowl, I actually, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a close game because Denver's defense is so good. But I Carolina is so good on both ends that I just, you know, I just see, I, when you just look at, okay, when you just look at Cam versus Peyton, Cam is clearly well ahead of where Peyton is now, which you couldn't have said 3 years ago, but now you can definitely say.
Okay, here you go. Over under. Former Ute star Lotulelei gets his hands on Peyton Manning at least once.
Over.
Come on, Ute fan. Come on, Devin. Give me your thoughts. Star gets his hands on Peyton and drops him?
One time.
One time? You don't think there's an over? You think it's dead even?
Yep.
Okay.
But you have to realize, if you watched that AFC matchup, did you see Peyton galloping for the first down? I mean, we're talking speed.
Well, okay.
Johnny.
No. Wait a minute.
Speed.
Wait a minute. Then you go to the sideline and you see his teammates surprised because he just did something. It's something that he's not going to do very often, if again. Don't even go there.
He hasn't done that very often any time in his career. So to see him just, you know, break out and run for the first down, I think it caught everyone off guard.
I guarantee you that locker room afterwards, Peyton got an earful from a couple of his teammates, probably laughing their butts off at him. Look at him. He's an old man out there running like a crazy man.
Look, I am a Denver Broncos fan. I will admit that. I am not a diehard NFL fan, though, so I feel like I can be a little less biased than people expect. I do think Carolina has an incredible team. I think Cam Newton has proven himself this season. They've lost one game. Was it one game?
Yep, just one.
Yeah.
If I recall, they have a tendency to let teams back in the game late, though, do they not?
Well, you would say they did. They didn't this last weekend against Arizona. Now, did they?
But have they a lot this season?
They've had their moments this season where that happened, yes.
Have the Denver Broncos been here before? A lot of these guys have been in this situation.
Oh, John, you see where he's going? Experience.
Broncos been here before? When's the last time the Broncos were in the Super Bowl?
2 years ago.
We don't want to talk about it.
2 years ago.
Seahawks fan, we don't want to talk about that.
Oh, no wonder John was asking that question. That's right, Seahawks fan here.
And I'll give you that.
Make sure you throw it on the goal line. Throw it next time. Just throw it.
What I'm getting at, we're not going to start talking about where the San Francisco 49ers are. We're not going to talk about, you know, the Seahawks postseason. We're going to talk about the Denver Broncos right now. They have guys that have been here. Hopefully they learn from that last Super Bowl. I think they have a chance. I think the odds are against them, but I think they have a chance. I think their defense has to play out of their minds. And I think Peyton needs one more great game, and I think it's possible.
I will say this on Peyton, as far as Peyton goes, that man can read defenses better than any person that plays in the NFL. That guy can stand up right there in the pocket and can pretty much predict what the opposing defense is going to do, and he's very good at it, and he can pretty much make them do what he wants them to do. The problem is that can his arm match what his mind and eyes are doing? And that's where, and can his offensive line protect him long enough to do so? That those are my two questions for Denver in this game.
And also, you have to keep in mind, is it possible that Kubiak could decide to give Osweiler some time? Because he has been the starter for a good portion of the season this year. You could see something different happen that people aren't expecting.
I agree.
All right, let's jump ship here. We've talked Super Bowl. I think our predictions are clear. John and I both have Carolina. Devin has Denver.
Carolina. My heart is saying Denver. And you guys who follow me on Twitter know I always follow my heart.
All right, so we're gonna jump topics real quick. Finish off our show here with a little pop culture. John, you had some things you wanted to talk about real quick.
Yeah, I missed the game because I went to the Sundance Film Festival, and my sister-in-law had free tickets, so we went up and we went to see Yoga Hosers, which is the new movie from Kevin Smith. And it was a cool experience. It was cool to have Kevin Smith be there at the beginning and introduce the movie and kind of talk about it. And apparently his daughter, Harley Quinn Smith, and Johnny Depp's daughter, Lily Rose Depp, are best friends in real life. And so they made a movie starring those two girls. And it really is a lot like a home movie where Kevin Smith just wanted to make a movie starring his daughter and her best friend. And Johnny Depp was on board, and they just kind of built a movie around that. And, you know, the movie itself is, to call it uneven would be an understatement. But, you know, after the movie, they bring out his daughter and a couple other cast members. And so that whole experience was cool. It was cool to watch him in his element and to watch her. She's just a sweetheart. So I enjoyed all that. Now, if Yoga Hosers hits theaters and people are like, should I pay $20 for me and my date to go see this? I'd say probably not. It's probably one of his worst movies. Because he's at a point where he can finance his own movies and he doesn't have to answer to a studio, and therefore he can make whatever he wants. And that's not necessarily a good thing, because it doesn't mean that there's anyone there to say, you know what, Kevin, I think it's a really bad idea to have sausage Nazis in this movie. But wait, no one said no.
You said sausage Nazis?
Sausage Nazis. Okay. This movie is about two teenage girls, and it's kind of got this clueless vibe to it. And about halfway through the movie, and they learn that there used to be Nazis in Canada. And you're like, okay, whatever. But then these sausage Nazis show up. And so there are these Nazis that are like a foot tall, and they're made completely of bratwursts. So they're bratsies. And they kill people by crawling up their butts and drilling through them and then coming out of their mouths. Oh, and that dear. Happened. And I was like, what? Why did he think this was a good idea? And so then it kind of turns into a Gremlins type movie where you have these sausage Nazis running around. These two girls got to figure out how to beat them. And,
why wasn't it a good idea?
Gosh, you remember those Quiznos creatures?
This is a sob.
Remember those?
Yeah, I remember those.
The sausage Nazis are a lot like those things.
So, if you're a fan of Quiznos commercials, go see this movie.
Yeah, it was very silly. Very, very, very silly. I don't know if that's going to go to theaters. I don't know if anyone's going to buy it. I would recommend to Netflix to buy it and just put it on there. And then, you know, diehard Kevin Smith fans can watch it and feel like completists.
I can't say that.
The experience was enjoyable. The experience was enjoyable because Kevin Smith was there for the before and after, and you got to meet some cast members. And that's what's cool about Sundance, is you can be there and be witness to the creative process. And, you know, I'd hope to be able to do that with the better movie. But, you know, his daughter's a pretty decent actress. And Johnny Depp's daughter, I think, really does have a career in movies. I thought she was like an American Keira Knightley, I thought. So,
well, I'm just looking here. It has Johnny Depp, Kevin Smith, of course. It has Haley Joel Osment, it says, and Justin Long.
Yeah, Justin Long was a yoga instructor. Haley Joel Osment, he played a Nazi in the flashback. It had some good cast members. It had Tony Hale from Arrested Development and Veep. He played one of their dads. Natasha Lyonne from Orange is the New Black played one of the moms. Oh, this was my favorite part of actually about the experience. There are two boys in the movie who are love interests. And one of the boys was on the Carrie Diaries, and now he's in the Shannara Chronicles on MTV. And the other boy is from MTV's Teen Wolf. So when Kevin Smith was writing this movie, he asked his daughter, you know, what boys would you like to work with? And she had a big crush on the boy from the Carrie Diaries, and she had a big crush on the boy from Teen Wolf. And so he called them to see if they wanted to be in a Kevin Smith movie. And both of them were like, yeah. So I thought that was a great story.
You lost me at sausage Nazis. I'm just saying, you've lost me completely at sausage Nazis. So that said, there you go.
Alan, what Alan is saying is, have you seen any other movies, John?
Well, I know John mentioned a movie he did see he wanted to talk about, and that was 13 Hours.
Yeah, 13 Hours. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, you will see all the new releases in January are getting terrible reviews. 13 Hours is at 60%. I actually think that movie's getting politicized unfairly, and maybe there are some reviewers who are thumbing it down because they're just, you know, really liberal and they just assume that it's right wing and therefore they don't like it. And I actually looked at some of the negative reviews and then looked at their reviews of more liberal tinted movies and found that a couple of them were the case. Some of them were being fair. Some of it's legitimate criticism because it is Michael Bay, and there are some Michael Bay things that he does that can be very annoying and predictable. Like, he loves to have scenes during sunset or sunrise, but then a few minutes later, the sun's at midday or it's setting, and you're just like, you know, put the sun somewhere and keep it there. but it's just a really good movie about six soldiers who are out there in Libya, and there's this mob who attacks the embassy, and they're the only ones who can protect them. And it's a good movie about the heroism of the soldiers out there who put their lives on the line. And it's just a straightforward adventure. I think it's probably the best thing Michael Bay's done in a long time. It had John Krasinski from The Office, and he plays this kick butt soldier, and I think it's probably the best acting he's ever done. So I really enjoyed it. So if people want to see movies and they're caught up on the stuff that's nominated for Oscars, 13 Hours is a good option.
And to be honest with you, at least some of the critics I've spoken to, I think the biggest bad rap that movie gets is because it's a Michael Bay movie, not because it's anything to do with politics.
Yeah, it doesn't really touch on politics that much. It just touches on, this is the experience of the men there at the time.
Right, which, and I failed when I said politics, but I mean, back to your point of why some of it's getting a bad rap. Again, some of the folks I've talked to, I think the bad rap comes back to, it's a Michael Bay film, and while it might have been good for Michael Bay, many of them have talked about how you can still find some Michael Bay problems in it, just like you've seen with most of his films.
Yeah, but I want to reemphasize that it's a really good movie overall, and then especially for him, because he's good at action scenes, and there's a really good job of building the suspense. You're getting deeper in the night, and they're just having more and more people approaching them, and they have no idea if they're on their side or not. Does a really good job of building the suspense that way. And I kind of thought of his earlier works like Armageddon or The Rock, and he's shown some growth. Actually, I would compare it favorably to Pearl Harbor, where Pearl Harbor was this serious subject that I thought he failed on delivering. I thought he made a 2.5 trailer for his own movie. I think this movie showed maturity in a lot of those aspects, where you get to know the guys, you sympathize with the guys, you have a pretty clear feeling of geography of where everybody is and how things are closing in. So I just really enjoyed it. It's not one where it's like, oh, it should be up for Oscars too. I just think it's a really good, straightforward tribute to the bravery of soldiers. And I would say I found it almost as satisfying as Lone Survivor, if you ever saw that with Mark Wahlberg.
I didn't, but I'll have to take both under consideration then. So, funny you mentioned Mark Wahlberg. My last piece to contribute here is I did see Mark Wahlberg last weekend with my family. We went and saw Daddy's Home. I was not impressed.
I warned you.
Yeah, I know you did. And
it had a couple moments, right?
It had a couple moments, and I'll preface this first of all by saying I don't like Will Ferrell. I never have been much of a fan of his. So it you know, maybe I had my thoughts on it tainted before watching it, but had a really difficult time with it. And then I took the entire family, and there were moments in that movie that I felt like maybe my kids shouldn't be there to watch. What I thought would be a family funny movie just had a lot of adult themes to it that I just did not like, for my kids. And I really didn't like the film. I didn't think it was very good.
Will Ferrell won me over at one point, probably around the first Anchorman.
And then dropped off the face of the earth.
His choices lately haven't been good. I liked the other guys. I kind of like Step Brothers.
Did you like Talladega Nights?
Yeah, Talladega Nights is pretty funny. He was all right in Zoolander. It's been so long since I saw Zoolander that I don't really know.
Wasn't he with Heater in what was that skating movie?
Oh, Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory.
Yeah, I didn't really like that movie.
I'm just saying, but I've never been a fan of his, man.
Lately, I haven't liked his stuff lately. I didn't like Anchorman 2. I hated Get Hard. And when Daddy's Home got bad reviews, I was like, I don't have to see it then.
It had so much. I'll tell you this. I'll say this. It had a lot of potential, and I thought it fell short in so much of that potential. It could have been so much better. And I don't think Wahlberg did all that bad a job himself. I just thought that the movie just fell short in a lot of areas.
Well, that's a shame.
So, all right. Well, let's wrap this up. We've gone long. We've got a lot of packed show here. So, don't give me a weird look, Devin. Enough said there. Anyway, we want to thank you all for joining us on another week of Jedi and Germs. Look us up on Facebook, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Twitter, Jedi and Germs. Find us on iTunes and what?
I forgot I was going to have Lost Taco Vendor on, but now we're out of time. We'll get him next time.
Yes, yes. We need to have Lost Taco Vendor. We forgot. Sorry. Lost Taco Vendor, you are a legend. We love you. We miss you. Anyway, find us on Stitcher and iTunes, Jedi and Germs. And please leave us a review on iTunes. Just go out and take just a couple minutes and do so. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. We always appreciate it. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.